Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour 1960s edition with me, Chris O'Reilly.
And with me, Brian Campion, ladies and gentlemen.
Alex Kulesh with you right here.
And our special guest on today's show, Australian supermodel and part-time handball journalist, Courtney Gayan. Also a special guest, mathematician extraordinaire and Bjorn Patson wannabe, Adrian Costeau. Not yet. And also, oh, what?
Sorry, let's keep going.
And most importantly, our live studio audience, Blake Van Duvenvoorde. And that is a real name, believe it or not. One set of main round matches left at AHF Euro 2020. We have three sides already confirmed for the semi-finals. They are Croatia, Spain, and Norway after their odd victory over Iceland today. After being spoiled for all these days in Malmö, we finally got a terrible handball match.
God, and you're very excited today.
I don't know how you're so excited after that terrible game.
And here to tell us all about that terrible handball match in 10 seconds, Adrian Costello.
Not the best match for either Sweden or Hungary. But Hungary get to live another day. They can qualify for the final weekend in Stockholm. So that's that, even if they lost today.
Yeah, after all that, they're still in with a chance, huh?
And they could be in prime position. A win against Portugal, not looking as daunting as it's been earlier in the competition. Slovenia play a Norway team that are already through, so that might throw things in the air. But it would be difficult to see Hungary at this competition in the semi-final. Just difficult to watch, I think.
I still don't understand how they do it. They've been a team that have played way beyond their means. And it's been very impressive from the coaching staff, but today they were really found out by a decent defense. And you have to wonder whether the clash of styles tomorrow between Portugal and Hungary will work in their favor or not.
I would say it looks like Portugal are going to have the upper hand, but I think from what we've seen of Hungary, we know that we can't underestimate them at all. Speaking to them after the game, they seemed a bit tired, and I think it seems like it should be Portugal going to take the win, but Hungary have shown us that we definitely cannot underestimate them.
And they have a huge time advantage as well, Portugal, tomorrow. If tiredness is taken into consideration, the fact that they had to play the last game this evening, we're talking, and it was a really tough game. I mean, it wasn't the most entertaining game, but it was a really physically challenging game. They only got 29 shots on target in 60 minutes, which showed how tough the defense was.
But I think you could see how tired they were.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you're tired, you're shot. Mm. Goes over the bar. It goes wide. How long do they have now? 16-hour turnaround?
Problem is that their style is very physical, and that takes a lot of takes a big toll on their stamina. And it would be very difficult because this would be their seventh game in, I don't know, 10 days, 11 days, maybe more. But it will be very very difficult for them to be back to analyze properly Portugal and see how they can beat them, because they're in a must-win situation.
Very interesting point you just made there, the amount of games in those days. And if you consider Portugal, who had an extra day before their, or an extra day rest overall for these games, and they've had an extra 4 hours on top of that. And Portugal, yeah, not playing their best game again today. Maybe this, the realization that this, they're real contenders, has kind of hit them a little bit, and expectation has taken its toll, but they are still producing nice handball. And it doesn't look like they're becoming physically drained. And the fact that they were able to bring in Andre Gomes again today, who had a fantastic game, I think everything points towards Portugal having the upper hand, as Courtney said.
As you said, the coaching staff have done a great job preparing them, and I think that they might come into this game really mentally strong. This has been a really big weapon for them. Also, coming back in every second half of every game pretty much has been, the coach has said that that's a lot about talking about positive feelings and keeping on going. And I think there's a general feeling that they have nothing to lose, and so they have a less pressure. And for them, this semi-final is, Roland Mikler said tonight, this is just like a big dream, and they didn't expect to be playing for this. So why not? They can really go into this game with pretty much little pressure. They came here hoping to be competitive, and now they're playing for a semi-final spot. I think they could surprise us.
Isn't that huge pressure, though? Like, all of a sudden the dream becomes a reality, and they're like, oh, we're actually so close now. We just have to win one more game. And maybe that was what was wrong today. Maybe that was the pressure maybe got to them a little bit. I don't know. It didn't really seem like that. It just seemed like they were.
Maybe that was a factor, the fact that they... If you believe that Norway are going to beat Slovenia when push comes to shove and you just need 2 points to get through, then maybe they thought that this game was almost like a gimme against the hosts, and that they'll go all guns blazing against the... I was going to say on paper a weaker side, but Portugal on paper are not even a weaker side at the moment. But aside, maybe they believe they would have a better chance against when it comes to the clash of styles.
I don't know. When you're coming into that game today, would you have said that Sweden are easier victory or Portugal are easier victory?
Sweden had a lot to prove in that game. I don't think they proved much with the reaction of the stadium at the end of that win. Everyone was still probably just as disappointed as a loss. But I think Sweden weren't going to let Hungary win. But also, we see that Portugal also have a big game on their hands. A chance to get into the Olympic qualification tournament is still within reach. Mm. So it's two teams with... I don't think pressure lands there, because they're both in a bonus situation. Mm. Neither of them expected to be there. Mm. Neither of them... It would be a huge disappointment. No one will be disappointed if they didn't make it. But they can get this bonus victory, get to the final weekend. I think it's going to be an open game, at least.
Okay, quick round table. Who's going to win that game? Adrian.
Portugal.
Courtney.
I do think Portugal.
Brian.
Hungary.
Ooh. Alex.
Hungary.
Blake.
Portugal.
Chris.
Portugal.
You asked yourself there. That was nice. Do you do that when you're alone sometimes as well?
I like to practice.
I just said my name to
myself. Do we really need to be here, Chris? Yeah. You just want to be on your own here.
The Chris O'Reilly hour.
Nobody introduced me. Anyway.
Tear in your eye.
Oh, gosh. All right, well, that's a mixed opinion, which is good. But 4-2.
Very hard to know. Really.
It's hard to know.
Yeah. I mean, as you said, these mix of teams, they all can beat each other. Mm. And we've seen that. You know, it's really, you don't know what you're going to get the next day and what kind of team is going to show up. So it's almost 50-50 in my head, you know.
Depending on how that game goes, if Hungary are victorious, then Slovenia and Norway have a lot to play for. But if it's a Portugal win, then it's a group final. And the big question is, for Norway, who they want to face in the semi-final. And they have the huge advantage of knowing who'll finish first and second in the other group, when the group final between Croatia and Spain will have already taken place by the time Norway take court tomorrow night.
Is there anyone who would want to face Spain over Croatia? I don't think so. I think everyone would want to face Croatia over Spain.
Well, shall we, before we go to the Norway game, then should we talk about Croatia-Spain, the group final over in Vienna? Two sides who are unbeaten in the main round cruised through it, in all fairness. What do you think, Adrian?
Well, you said that which team would like to face Spain, and I think neither of these teams would like to meet them in the semi-final, because they're really playing very good in attack, which is surprising, because we were treated to much defense-based Spanish side in the last championships. And they distributed well the minutes throughout the players, and they have a lot of depth. And I think they're very, very good. I wouldn't say that they're the team to beat, Spain, up until this point. But I think they're the favorites in this tournament, because Norway had their ups and downs. I don't know if it was a tougher group for Norway, playing against France or playing here in Malmö. But I really think... both Slovenia and Norway would want to face Croatia rather than Spain, because Croatia have a very good defense, have experience on their side, but in attack they quite lack something. I don't know what it is to put the finger on, but they're quite lacking something, and I think they're an easier matchup in the semifinal after so many days in the tournament.
Do you think it's the tactical approach, Courtney, that Croatia could be lacking there?
I think Jordi Ribera is very difficult to beat. I think he's one of the best coaches. I actually don't know as much about tactics, but I think that Croatia have maybe a bit less depth, and I would say Spain have a big advantage in goal. Corrales and Perez de Vargas, one of the best, and they're performing well here. So I agree that Spain are, as Adrian said, I don't think anyone would choose Spain over Croatia.
And you mentioned, Adrian, that Spain have spread their minutes a lot. The whole squad has gotten huge time. No one's been too stressed. Maybe Alex Dushabayev has been, although Makeda has also played incredibly well. And the other teams, we see injuries popping up. So the other two teams qualified.
Cindric, for example.
Cindric is out of that group final. We saw Magnus Rudd is out of the tournament. How big of an impact can that make for the final weekend for the teams that are already there?
Well, I've seen Norway playing their main players a lot, riding their main players. Of course, Sagosen, who is the top goal scorer, didn't play as much as other players, but their wings have been consistently on the court permanently, practically, because I've seen Bjornsson, I think he missed only 30 minutes in this tournament so far. So that's a lot. That's a lot. And but I've also seen Norway today against Iceland. So they had this they started very, very good, but let the foot off the gas a little in the end. Of course, it was also Iceland who made a comeback, but I think Norway were trying to save some energy before their game tomorrow against Slovenia.
And it's nice when you go 7-0 up in a game. you can afford to do that.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's a perfect scenario.
Is it maybe fair to say, though, that in the group in Vienna, that Croatia and Spain have had it incredibly easy as well, for the most part? Of course, the Croatia game against Germany was the highlight of that group, but really the only highlight of that group.
Yeah.
Was there any other game that really springs to mind as a real battle?
No, because Spain disposed of their opponents quite easily. And they were the top two teams in that group. Germany lost both against Spain and against Croatia, and that's that. They practically were through after the second game in the main round. Of course, Spain needed one more game to mathematically assure their berth, but it was over.
Brian, do you see any chance for Croatia?
I think they just rely so much on individual players to do everything. You know, it's always their goals look always so kind of a moment of genius from somebody in a certain extent. And I think Spain looked like a real structure everywhere. I mean, you'd imagine you take that over everything else. But I mean, the big question is, can Croatia make it into like a fight on the day? I mean, if they do have very special players who can do everything. But they are missing one of their most special players with Cindric. And I think I fancy Spain to win it just for those reasons.
And do you think Cindric is more injured than Croatia tried to let on? Do you think he's basically hobbled for the rest of the tournament?
Second game in a row, he's going to be missing now.
Mm.
Is he being protected, or is there something more at play? Who knows?
Well, being from near the Balkans, let's say, not in the Balkans, we like to play tactics on this. And I think if he was, if he had a mild injury, then he would have been at least on the bench or playing at least 10 minutes in the game against Spain, because you'll try to win the group, right? You don't know who will you play against. So the safe maths is Norway will beat Slovenia because they won all games until now. Slovenia have been, more inconsistent than Norway. And you want to win the group to play against Slovenia. That's the maths. But nobody knows. So he can also get 4 or 5 days rest, and then he can be, I don't know, 70-80% for the semifinal. It's a double-edged sword.
Do you see any chance for Croatia, Courtney?
on their best day, Croatia can shock everyone. So absolutely I do. Of course, Sindrić is a big absence, but they have others. Duvnjak, Karacic, who can step in. As Brian said, the individual skills is one of their biggest strengths. And yeah, Sindrić is a big absence, but it's definitely not the end for Croatia, you know, in a game to decide the group. Maybe on the final weekend, that would maybe be more decisive.
I mean, with Martin Sego in goal, he can pop up and just save one shot in the whole game. But the one shot that matters.
Yes.
You know, anything can happen.
But anyone going to shout out and say that Croatia are going to win this group final in Vienna?
But Croatia, Croatia have 3 days rest. Croatia have 3 days rest. That's because true. They played their B team against the Czech Republic.
That's true, yeah.
And they still won. So 3 days rest at this stage of competition makes a huge difference.
Yeah. You said the same about Russia winning the World Championship as well. The
Women's World Championship.
You said the exact same thing over there. You were like, rest is everything in these tournaments. And then the Dutch
won. And Russia played 20 minutes of not top handball and lost the tournament.
Sure, but but
so it comes down to that. So I don't think we can count out Croatia.
I'm not counting anybody out, Alex.
Okay, but I think we're all saying that Spain are the favourites coming into this one, and we believe in one way or another they will come out on top.
Yeah.
So back to Malmö then, and there are two scenarios. Scenario one, Portugal win.
There are never only two scenarios.
There are two scenarios, Adrian. Scenario one, Hungary still have a chance of reaching the semi-final. And that makes the Slovenia-Norway game a lot more interesting. Push comes to shove, Slovenia need to get a result against Norway. Can they do it? And if they can, how do they do it?
Adrian said it there like it was absolutely impossible, basically. Like, the way you phrased it, it sounded like this is never going to happen. That's
why we're going to resident Slovenia.
There are never only two scenarios.
Expert.
Nerd.
Nerd. The Australian Courtney Gain.
Well, first of all, if Hungary lose, then Slovenia already know they're safe, so...
I said scenario one. Hungary win. Scenario one.
I think this is going to be a very interesting game. Right now, I would say Norway look pretty impossible to beat, but this potentially could be one of the first really big tests for Norway. If Slovenia pull out their best game, which they didn't today, this was a gritty win that they took today. If Slovenia play their best game, then it can be interesting. Norway are looking really good. And they're starting so strong. I think Slovenia, sometimes mentality can be a problem. If they fall far behind at the start, that can be a problem for them to come back. You know, Iceland, they have Gudmundur Gudmundsson, who is, I think, really good at motivating them to come back. I'm not sure if Ranges has the same impact with his team, but...
I think he'll certainly have them set up well around this thing. He's proven that he's good at setting up the tactics for these games. Are there any particular areas of the Slovenia game that could hurt Norway or take advantage of this Norway team?
Do you think we learned something today from the Gisason for Iceland, what he was doing to Sagsson in certain parts of the game? It was only for certain parts of the second half, but he was really roughing them up. And it really was, I thought, changing the whole game there.
And Hungary did the same.
Yeah.
With Sagsson.
Yeah.
And Slovenia also have these defensive enforcers who can really put pressure on the opposing playmaker. Blagotinšek is quite good in that area, but I think Slovenia started the tournament very well, got two wins, very important wins, and then it was a little bit downhill from there. I don't know if it's about the tiredness or something like that, but they haven't been the same in the main round here in Malmö. And I was talking to Courtney during the games, and I've noticed that they didn't have the speed they had in the previous games. And that's very important, because you can't beat Norway without speed.
Well, I was just going to say exactly that this is maybe one area that Slovenia can challenge Norway in a way that maybe some other teams can't. They also like speed, and maybe they can match Norway a little bit there. I think the Slovenia respond sometimes to pressure. And they are confident. When I spoke to them 2 days ago, Bombach said, are you confident you're going to semifinals? Yes. So maybe almost tonight was almost, they went into this game thinking they would win easily. Something was a bit off, I don't know. But I think tomorrow they're going to be really ready to come into the game.
Do you think the best way to approach Norway is to also attack them with speed?
Just start a game well, because...
Start a game well, yeah, sure, yeah. But just, that doesn't mean...
No team has ever started good against Norway.
Yes, in this tournament, yeah.
And that was very important, because they always had to come from behind. No, France... France didn't start.
Portugal did okay. I can't remember correctly now. What was the opening score against Portugal? I remember Portugal doing very well for about 40 minutes, though.
It was actually quite close also with Sweden. In the first minutes, it was like one goal difference.
Watching Portugal, and they slowed the whole thing down totally. Like, I remember them starting slow.
And Sweden slowed it down as well. So maybe that is the way to go. But you have to slow them down straight away.
Yeah. Not you like today. Not
you
like
can't
today.
Let them score 7 goals without a reply.
It's just not a good way to start a handball match. Yeah.
Would you just man-mark Sagason for the first 10 minutes?
I think nobody did that.
No one has taken Sagason.
Slovenia certainly have the players to chase Sagason around one against one in defense.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone likes doing that. It ruins a game, right?
I don't think when it comes to getting a result, particularly if it's a game which Slovenia need to get a result, I think Franjes would play 14 against 14 if you had to. I don't think it matters at that stage when it comes to
he'll enter on the court himself, right?
He would chase Sagason around if needs be. I think beautiful handball at this stage of the competition really goes out the window.
We saw it in the Sweden versus Hungary game.
Game of the tournament. Hey, that's my nomination for Dark Horse of Game of the Tournament. Oh, was it 4-0, 4-4 after 18 minutes or something like that? 20 minutes, yeah.
One thing for Slovenia's defence is Blaž Janš is very good marking out, and maybe he could be a really good weapon to mark out Sagason and get some steals like he did today and score some easy goals. This could... If they're going to mark him out to begin with, I would say that might be what they do.
I remember there was a two podcasts ago where we were talking about this, and I remember saying I wanted to see Norway-Slovenia as the first game of the group, because I wanted to see them a bit fresher, Slovenia especially, against Norway. And it's going to be interesting to see now who's the freshest, basically. I mean, Norway still look pretty good, but I think we learned a little bit today in the second half when those young guys came on and they really roughed them up a bit. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was incredible defence in certain parts of it. I mean, they were really just loads of mistakes, but they were really just going for it and just...
But Sagason also loves that. You mentioned Gislason.
Yeah, he does where actually,
So Gislason came out to him, tackled him.
Yeah.
Sagason took the ball. Okay, let's do it again. He did it again.
Yeah.
Gislason took him down, great tackle. Sagason's like, this is it. Goes again, and Gislason gets two minutes. Yeah. He's like, get out of here. Yeah. Get out of here. Don't need it.
But Christian Berger must be looking at that and saying, no! And wrapping him up in cotton wool and sending him off to Stockholm. Scenario two is that we know everything already by that final game. We know the four semifinalists, and we know who's waiting in semifinal one and semifinal two in Stockholm. Then what kind of game does Norway play? Yes, they can dictate who they want to play in the semifinal if that matters to them. But if for some reason Croatia win the game against Spain, do you think Christian Berger and Norway will go, all right, we'll throw this one?
No.
Nah.
I think they never want to take the foot off the gas at all. Yeah. They're anytime talking to them, they're in 150%. You know, they've reached the final stages at a couple of tournaments, well, several tournaments now, and never got to the top of the podium. I think every tournament they're coming in, they're doing the work in between. How do we get to that? How do we get to win that final? I don't think they will compromise their game at all. I can't see them doing that.
Their style of play is just so uncompromising anyway. I mean, they're the most intense team at this tournament in terms of and they're the most direct team in terms of, you look at Slovenia and the way they score goals, it's like, if you're going to follow the ball with a pencil on a paper, it would be all over the place. And their route to the goal is so complicated. And Norway is just like so direct and so intense towards goal every time. And almost it's kind of like the purest handball, really, because it's just like drive, straight, shoot. you know, where Slovenia is like a beautiful mix of passing and one against one.
Depends what you like. Like, that's
no, I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm just saying,
as you say, Norway play a nice direct style, and it's lovely to watch. But I also really like the Slovenian creativity. You just never know what they're going to do, and I think it's really interesting. And this is one thing that Uroš Zorman spoke about, the Slovenian centre-back. So I interviewed him about this the other day, about why Slovenia have this strong tradition of centre-backs. And he said he thinks it's really because of this creativity that they learn when they're kids. They're just playing handball all the time without a lot of structure. And so they learn this improvisation, and that's what we see in their game.
Do you think that maybe, though, that's a little bit of their downfall sometimes as well, though? Because they, when push comes to shove, my favorite phrase, just that's two podcasts in a row now, I've used that phrase, that they sometimes over-egg the pudding.
Yes, perhaps sometimes with a bit less structure in attack, they might have some struggles. I think they had that a bit today. Some mistakes, some occasionally looking a little bit lost. But then the one thing I think that's interesting that they've done a bit in this tournament is putting Bombats and Zarabets on together. And when they're on together, I mean, of course, the formation is always interesting, but I've noticed that they do this when they're having trouble in attack. They put on both Bombats and Zarabets, who really feel each other well and both have ideas of what can be done and read each other easily. So you have two more creative minds on the court at the same time.
So who's going to win? Courtney?
I think it looks difficult for Slovenia to beat Norway.
So a draw?
Yes.
Adrian?
Which scenario?
where both teams need to win.
Norway.
Brian?
I'm just going to go against the grain and say Slovenia.
Alex?
Norway are not going to rest anyone. Because why would they avoid Spain in the semi-final and then probably play them in the final? They've been there before, they want to win. So, Norway are going to win.
Blake?
I agree, Norway are looking pretty hard to beat.
Nobody's going to hear you from there.
Yeah.
Norway.
He said Norway.
Okay, good thing most of us said Norway, because we have a Norwegian player as our interview for this podcast, Torbjørn Bergerud. We spoke to him after the victory over Sweden about media, about sleeping, about amazing goalkeeping, and
a few nerves.
Nerves, yeah. Let's listen in.
I heard of a little birdie that you only slept about 2 hours last night. Is that true?
Two, maybe 4 hours, I think. I got the two periods of the 2 hours, so that's better than nothing.
Is that adrenaline flowing through your veins still, or is it more catching up on Netflix?
I use Netflix to fall asleep, actually. So
it must be tough playing so late, because we've experienced it as well, playing, and then your mind must just be buzzing, particularly after such a performance like yesterday, that it must be hard to just switch your mind off.
Yeah, this is really hard after this kind of match, where there's so much power, and when we play against another Scandinavian team that we know is always something special. It was tough to sleep last night, but I hopefully get some sleep later today.
But you were really enjoying that match yesterday. I could see it on your face, and there was one stage I was watching during the penalties, and you had a smile on your face, like it was almost like a game for you, and then you saved, and you're like, I knew I was going to save that one.
Yeah, maybe it's a bit of confidence during the match, but I felt good through the whole 60 minutes, through the whole match, and then I get a little smile on my face.
Talk to me about the tactical approach, because Norway and Sweden have really, you know, you have a bit of a need for speed and counter-attacking as well, but it seemed both sides slowed the game down a bit. Was that a particular aim of the team leading into the game?
I think it went that way because both teams are maybe a little bit afraid of the other teams that are good with these counter-attacks. It was so tough and so hard with the defense. I think many of the players were maybe a little bit tired. So I think maybe that's the reason.
And of course, you've played now, you started as a host
and then you played against the host last night. What, how was it swapping roles like for that for you guys?
It's a bit, can you say, strange with this championship when we play in three nationals, but that's the way it is. Norway and Sweden is close, so we're a bit luckier than, for example, Spain, that has to travel from Norway to Austria and then be to Sweden. For us, I think it works okay. But of course, we wanted the spectators also to the whole championship. But I think we got some good Norwegian fans here as well.
Absolutely, Norwegian fans are very good at traveling. Particularly, we see that in women's championships over the years. And we were up in Trondheim for the first week as well, so we had a first-hand experience of how it was. And just for you, playing a home championship for that first week at least. Is it something that you really thrived off in the games? Because it seemed like, well, Sander in particular was really like, the way you described it, he was like, I'm your savior, it's like, give me your love, you know? But you must have all fed off that throughout the week.
Yeah, it's something special when you play at home. I know for example, the first match was very nervous, especially from me, very nervous match. But the next two, we could more just enjoy it. Because the spectators were amazing. I've never experienced Norwegian fans makes that kind of noise in a handball match. Usually they're just sitting there politely and clapping in their hands. This time it was much more. It was very special and it was very fun.
It was your old pal, Ole Ervik, who had a bit of a... He was a public enemy number one, I think, for one day. He told the fans to have a few beers and kind of cheer up a bit. And it seemed to work, though.
Yeah, it worked. We got this extra man in our back, and it helped us through the match against France and Portugal, for sure.
You mentioned there that you were a bit nervous before some of the games. Is that something you need, almost a little bit of nerves, to kind of get you in the mood? Or is it something you don't want at all?
Of course, when you get a bit nervous, then you then you're maybe more sharp through the match. But too much nervousness, then it's not that good. And I think that was the main problem for me.
This championship has gone almost too well so far. It's been a perfect run for you. What do you think the difference has been in this championship? We felt like at the beginning or the build-up, a lot of talk in the media was about Sander, first of all, and secondly about you as well, and whether you'd be able to hit top form. It has gone perfectly so far, but it's been a real team performance throughout the championship.
Yeah, and we have shown that for the last couple of years. Maybe we don't have these superstars in the handball world, but we have many good players, and we fit very, very well together. As you said, we're a team. We're not individuals. We're that as well. But first of all, we stand there as a team.
What are the key things that you feel as a team to survive a championship like this are, like to go day in, day out, preparing for the next game? What are the key characteristics to actually surviving a three-week championship? You've done it quite well in the last few years.
That's a difficult question because in a championship, we need this flow, you know. When you get in the flow and just have the moment, you feel almost invincible in these matches. I don't know what to, we're just doing our things. Makes ourselves prepared for every match and watch the videos we have to, so we're well prepared. But I think everyone does that, and then it's just sometimes it's just who has the day, who delivers in this match. And so far we've done it very well. Hopefully we'll do this for the next two matches as well.
Do you go to the media and you read articles and stuff like that, or do you stay away from that during a tournament like this?
I think this is the tournament I read less. I'm almost not reading anything this championship. Yeah. Earlier in the championship, I've read some more, and I found out that doesn't work for me. So now I'm not reading that much. If there's an article about me, then I'll will definitely not read it. With a team, maybe, but it's not that much.
Yeah, maybe a podcast. You listen to a podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows things about you so far? So,
but it must be particularly when things are going so well for you individually. There must be. Temptation to read the good words about you, but I guess you know that, or you just feel like, no, I know myself and that's all that matters.
As I said, I know myself, and I have my goalkeeper coach in Steiner and the goalkeeper team. We talk together and speak about what the match was like, and we know that better than the media how it went. So what media writes, that's up to them.
I hope Torbjörn watched the game this evening to help with his sleeping woes.
So to end this podcast, I have a bit of a quiz for everyone around this table.
Oh.
I've been looking into shooting percentages, because I think shooting percentages is something that people don't pay enough attention to. You look at a stat sheet, you look at, look at Hansen, he scored 7 goals today. He may have taken 15 shots. People don't care about it, but with the bigger stats that we have in this tournament, I have looked at back players in particular. And my definition of a good shooting percentage, what would you say is a good shooting percentage for a backcourt player, Chris?
For a real shooter in the backcourt?
For a backcourt player, what is a good shooting percentage, Chris?
If you're taking 10 shots a game, 60%.
60%?
Yeah.
Might get you a win. What do you think is the average shooting percentage of teams, of winning teams in this tournament, Brian?
I'd say 50? No.
63.5.
I was going to say 63.
63 and 64. 63.5 on average wins you a game. We've seen teams up at 72. If you're shooting above 70 as a team, you're almost guaranteed to win. If you're in those mid-60s, that's where the battle happens.
Is this like Moneyball, the movie?
I'm getting Moneyball started. I think Moneyball is missing from handball. That's why Agropolo... No. That's too harsh. That's why 37-year-old Akambre is still getting big contracts. Because he's a big name and no one's looking at the stats. So we know that a team, they shoot 64%, they're more likely to win. So if you have your main player and he's shooting above 64%, you're probably likely to win. So I'm going to throw out some names for you and you tell me if they've had a good tournament stats-wise. So starting with you, Courtney, and my namesake, Ruslan Kulesh, has he had a good tournament?
I haven't been following Group 1 as much. Yes, I would say yes. From what I've seen, he's had a good tournament. Am I supposed to give a number?
You don't have to give a number. He's been a big star of this tournament. A lot of people have liked him. He's shot 51% on field shots.
Ooh.
51%. That's not going to win
you a game. For a shooting backcourt.
For a shooting backcourt. Let's give you another one. Adrian. Sagason.
59%.
Sagason has shot 67%, yay! Which is out of this world for a guy who has scored 51 goals.
Yeah.
And add all his assists and everything. So Sagason is your guy.
Okay, so he's out now, is he?
Nobody's out.
Now, Brian, your Dolinets, has he had a good tournament for you?
My feeling will be no.
No?
No. I'd say he's 53.
62% for your Dolinets.
All right.
Who's done the business. His standing shots have been fire in this tournament. 62 is right there for a main guy. We're around the middle.
Fair enough. Sorry, you're right.
Can't wait for my name now. What's going to happen here?
Let's go, Chris. I'm going to give you a tricky one. Zsolt Balogh. For Hungary.
I'd say bad.
Has he had a good tournament?
Bad.
Yes. 62%.
61%.
Solfalog.
Solfalog.
I've changed my mind in this quiz. This is good. Let's go another round.
But just to bring you back to the first question you asked me then about backcourt players, because these are all backcourt players. So a shooting backcourt player, the definition of good is 60% then.
63.
I'm saying closer to 63. I think
okay.
At 60, you're more at the risk because, you know, shooting teams, when they shoot okay. as
yeah.
a team,
yeah.
if they're above 63, they're doing well.
But you would assume then that but 63% for a team would get you the win. But in that world, I see wingers and line players bringing that percentage up, which means backcourt players can afford to be lower.
Yeah, but there's always going to be a couple of guys that are going to have yeah. stinkers. And we're talking about tournaments here. We're not talking about one game, because in handball, you can have a bad shooting game, you can have a bad game, and it all levels out. Let's go another round. I'm going to give you some extremes here. I'm going to give you some extremes. Here's an easy one for you, Chris. Aaron Palmerson. Has he had a good tournament?
No. Aaron Palmerson, I would say, is... he's played two good games. I'd say he's around 47%.
46% for Aaron Palmerson, who has been saved by the young guns, I think, in this tournament.
Yeah.
Right. Let's go, Brian. Here's the other end of the extreme.
So, I know the answer now.
Give you the other end of the extreme. He's had a good one, but let you know the extent.
Okay, okay.
Duvniak.
Should I give his percentage?
Give me Duvniak's shooting percentage.
Oh, extreme now is probably going to be something like maybe 69.
75.
86% for Domagoj Duvniak in this tournament.
Well, 21 out of 20 what?
21 out of 26.
And he can defend.
And he can defend.
Give the man a new contract. That's what I say.
He's shown up. Let's go. How about some wingers? Mm. Wingers. What should they shoot? I'm leaning towards 72%. 80%.
No, they shouldn't, but... everyone knows that stat from Yundal when he was at the World Championship when he scored something like 90 or something. It was something crazy, wasn't it? Every time he got the ball, he scored, basically. But that was...
that gets you on the All-Star team.
Yeah, that was extraordinary, though. But I'd say, yeah, probably 70, yeah.
I'd have 75%, because it's like 3 out of 4, you know? And for wingers to score more than, you know, 5-6 goals, it's quite difficult. We've seen Jans against Portugal today scoring 6, and he was very good.
I think 75 would do you quite well. So let me see. Yandal, let's go with Yandal. Has he had a good tournament in this?
79.
No, it's his less than that.
No, I think so too. I think not as strong as his world championship last year, percentage wise.
And both of you are right.
What do you mean both of us are right?
That it's lower than 79.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Hello.
69.
Brian's favorite number.
Courtney?
I'll say 71.
Smack in the middle, 70% for
Yundal. All right.
70%. if your winger's shooting 7 out of 10, you're probably pretty happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want them to shoot 7.5. Yeah. Get you that half goal, like the Portuguese say. And a last one. Let's go with a line player for you, Courtney. Ooh. What are we thinking for line players as a shooting percentage?
Probably the highest.
Should be high.
I'd say probably 78%.
I'll go 81.
Yeah. 83.
I was actually surprised by this, because the line player shooting has been lower than I thought. Mm. I'm a line player. I get given out to when I don't score.
You have to catch the ball first, Alex.
But I think a lot of what line players do is their shots are when their arm is getting pulled down, when they're getting tough shots. So it's a bit lower. And a top line player, Bense Banhidi.
While you say that the percentage is lower than you think, I would say that Banhidi is still high. And I will say 78 for him.
73 for Bense Banhidi.
He had Hungary's game today.
It seems like wingers and line players seem to have similar percentage, because wingers also get their fast breaks,
yeah.
So they bump their stats there. Mm-hmm. again, Karlek, 73%. Fabian Posch, 76%. There you go. Players are worse than we think.
Okay. And on that bombshell, everyone, I hope you enjoy the final round of matches in the main round of the world's best handball competition. Alex Kulesh, thank you very much. All of our guests today, Adrian Coste, Courtney Gayen, Blake Van Duvenvoorde, thank you very much. I'm Brian Campion. Until next time, as we say in Dutch,
dank je wel.